practice required on Fellows' part, as Disney later maintained, or more plausibly, whether it referred to the rapidly escalating value of Katzenberg's percentage. With the success of Little Mermaid and Pretty Woman, Katzenberg's incentive, deemed virtually worthless when it was granted, had soared in value. Little Mermaid seemed sure to join the pantheon of Disney classics, which meant revenues in perpetuity from home videos, re-releases, and merchandise tie-ins. If Eisner did, in fact, say he wanted to fire Katzenberg, Wells surely would have wanted to know what such a move would cost the company. Eisner later maintained that he knew nothing about Project Snowball, but when I pointed out the timing and asked if Eisner told Wells he wanted Katzenberg fired over the memo, he paused, then replied, "I may have." In any event, as the calculations began, Katzenberg knew nothing about them. At Disney's conference for Wall Street analysts in Orlando that September, Katzenberg made his manifesto the center of his presentation. To the music of Also Sprach Zarathustra, the theme from 2001 A Space Odyssey, a video showed a mysterious space object that grew larger until it revealed itself to be the memo. Eisner happened to see a rehearsal. "I don't think you should do that," he warned Katzenberg. "The memo is old news." But Katzenberg failed to take the hint, and the presentation went ahead, to Eisner's obvious chagrin. What was really galling to Eisner was that there was scant evidence that Katzenberg heeded the advice he had so freely dispensed in his memo. It was true that many of the films in the pipeline had been launched before he wrote the memo, but as the months and then years proceeded, Disney's record in live action was, if anything, worse than when Katzenberg wrote the memo. A measure of how far the studio's fortunes slipped was that Disney's highest-grossing film for 1993 was Cool Runnings, about a Jamaican bobsled team, which made $69 million. Just as it was difficult to pinpoint the source of the studio's remarkable success, it was now hard to diagnose the cause of the stunning reversal. No doubt the creation of a new studio, the doubling of production in live action, and the even greater increase in production of animated films stretched the resources of the company and the attention spans of Eisner and Katzenberg. In part, it reflected the changed landscape in theatrical film distribution identified by Katzenberg in his memo, which put enormous pressure on opening weekends, hugely expensive marketing campaigns, and the big-budget event films that, in the wake of Dick Tracy, Eisner and Katzenberg had vowed to avoid. The big hits in the years 1991 to 1993 were Spielberg's Schindler's List, more films in the Aliens and Batman franchises, and In the Line of Fire, which Eisner had turned down. On some level, the demoralizing string of failed films mirrored the deteriorating relationship between Eisner and Katzenberg. In their long and fruitful partnership, they had shared a remarkably similar taste in films. Now their views diverged. Finally, Katzenberg confronted Eisner, complaining that Eisner was coming to meetings unprepared, that he wasn't reading scripts, relying instead on brief summaries or coverage written by young assistants, and that his comments were unhelpful and embarrassing. Eisner interpreted this rebuke as a request that he stay away from the weekly meetings to discuss scripts and new live-action film ideas because he was undermining Katzenberg's authority.